Wow, I've had lots of cars.
I'm Bill Buckner, your host for All Things Considered. In Boston, got myself a Subaru, the basic Subaru sedan, and it didn't have air conditioning. So they gave me a great price. I was, I don't need air conditioning. Was I wrong? Any car can turn into All Things Considered on WSHU. Go to WSHU.org. And thanks.
You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. Early voting began on Long Island over the weekend. A closer look at how Connecticut counts its votes. Governor Lamont requests an audit of the state's college and university system. Plus, are you struggling with election anxiety? You are not alone. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Early voting on Long Island kicked off this weekend. Suffolk County officials say turnout there surpassed the 2020 and 2022 elections combined. WSHU's Desiree Diorio reports.
Saturday was the highest first day of early voting in Nassau and Suffolk counties. 29,000 voters cast their ballots in person in Nassau County, and almost 35,000 in Suffolk. Several polling places throughout the island reported long lines and wait times over half an hour. That includes polls in Glen Cove, Wyandanch, and Kings Park. Early voting continues through Sunday, November 3rd. Desiree Diorio, WSHU News.
U.S. officials warn that disinformation and misinformation about the counting of votes are big threats to voter confidence in the election this year. WSHU's Ebong Udama explains when and how Connecticut counts its votes.
Connecticut uses paper ballots for all votes. Ballots cast during early voting are sealed and stored securely in each town. Along with mail-in absentee ballots, they're opened and counted on Election Day. All ballots are run through the tabulators, and if a ballot cannot be read by the tabulator because too many ovals have been filled, it's placed in an auxiliary bin and counted by hand by two election officials at the end of the day. Initial results are expected to be reported by the Registrar of Voters on election night, but there's a three-day window to determine if a recount is necessary. That means town clerks won't confirm the results until November 8th. And a recount may not happen until November 12th. So in close counts, it might take a while to get the official result. Ebon Udama, WSHU News.
Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont announced late Friday that he's requested an audit of the Connecticut State Colleges and University System. WSHU's Ada Uzenlar has more.
Lamont's letter to State Controller Sean Scanlon requesting the audit calls for transparency and accountability in the Connecticut State Colleges and Universities System's finance management. He's asking for a report that includes a review of things like purchasing card history and expenditures for food and entertainment. The request comes after a report from Hearst detailed expensive meals and chauffeured rides from the system's chancellor, Terrence Chang. Lamont says the controversy follows a year of tuition increases and program reductions in the system, which oversees six public colleges and universities in the state. Ada Uzenlar, WSHU News.
The presidential election is making most Americans anxious, according to a recent survey. A conversation with a mindfulness expert on how to deal with those feelings is ahead.
Local support for After All Things comes from Hartford HealthCare, the only health system in the Northeast with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group. HartfordHealthCare.org.
Hundreds mourned the death of volunteer firefighter Robert Sharkovich, who died battling a brush fire in Berlin last week. His family held a wake yesterday, and his funeral was in Hartford this morning. The brush fire has been burning since last Monday, and since then, several more brush fires have started across the state. Residents of New York's Babylon Village rallied against the MTA study that suggests building an apartment complex near the town's railroad station. Governor Hochul says the area needs more housing. Babylon Village Mayor Mary Adams created an online petition for residents to sign in opposition. President Joe Biden issued an apology on Friday for the federal Indian boarding schools. A Shinnecock descendant of a former student says it's only the first step in making amends. WSHU's Janice Roman has more.
Biden visited the Gila River Indian community outside of Phoenix, Arizona, to formally apologize for the federal Indian boarding schools. Thousands of children were taken from their homes to residential schools for over a century. Autumn Rose Williams is a member of the Shinnecock Tribal Nation.
It brings a mix of emotions, honestly. And I think that it is a good start. And I would hope that the administration looks to each and every community that was affected to really talk to them about how they need to move forward.
Williams says her great-grandmother and aunt attended the Thomas Indian School in upstate New York. Her family didn't share much about their time there, but Williams says she's grateful that they were able to pass other aspects of the culture.
My Nana is my direct connection to the boarding school era, but that's not all of who she was. She was a woman who taught me how to live life.
In July, the Department of Interior released an investigative report on the schools. It found that 19,000 children were sent away and nearly 1,000 died while attending the schools. Janice Roman, WSHU News.
If you are feeling anxious about the upcoming presidential election, you are not alone. A survey from the American Psychological Association showed nearly 70% of respondents feel the same way. WSHU's Molly Ingram spoke with Dr. Judson Brewer, a mindfulness expert at Brown University, on how to cope.
As someone who covers politics a lot, I can tell you that when I talk to people, most of them say that they're nervous about this election. What do you think it is about the election that makes people anxious?
I would say the biggest one that I see is that the uncertainty that comes with the election. So our brains in general don't like uncertainty, and that's actually how they're set up. You know, when there's something uncertain, they're set up to try to solve that so they can, you know, they can see if it's dangerous or not. For example, you think of our ancient ancestors that heard a rustling in the bushes, that would set them on edge to say, go figure out what that is so that they could see if it's their family member or a lion, for example, so they could see if they're safe or not. So uncertainty is kind of built in for us to try to solve that uncertainty so that we, you know, out of a safety mechanism can figure out if we're safe or not.
And so according to the American Psychological Association, 69% of people are anxious about this upcoming election. In 2016, it was only 52%. What do you think is responsible for that jump?
There are a million contributors to that. I think the election cycle has, you know, we've seen a sea change in the election cycle with the introduction of Donald Trump to the, you know, to that. That's where things really changed in 2016. A lot of norms were upended. And I won't go into all of those, and I'm not a political scientist, so I'm not really qualified to do that. But in general, the more things are different than we're used to, the more that brings in more uncertainty, and that upends things. So it can be anything from somebody willing to be, you know, say things that typically politicians wouldn't say, for example, or you bring in uncertainty in many different ways, whether it's political uncertainty, but then add in things like environmental uncertainty, add in economic uncertainties. So a lot of those things have always been here. You know, the economy's never certain, but we're now adding in things like the environment is more uncertain than it has been in the past. The political candidates are willing to do things that are different than were the norms in the past. And so all of these things add together and kind of add on each other. The uncertainty. On top of that, we've had a lot of misinformation and disinformation. So if you look at uncertainty, our brain looks to try to solve that. And in our natural environment, you know, you look in the bushes to see if it's a lion or not. Now you can't really look on the internet to see if a news cycle or some news headline is real or not, because it's on the internet.
And so I think the million-dollar question everyone's asking is, what can you do to relieve some of that anxiety?
Yes. So personally, we can first check to see, I think of it this way, if we don't know how our brains work, we can't learn how to work with our brains. So just seeing how this can be a cyclical process for ourselves reduces some uncertainty. So for example, any habit is formed through three elements, a trigger, a behavior, and a result. So for example, if we feel nervous because we're uncertain about the election, there's the trigger. The behavior might be that we go check our news feed, right? And then our brain might get a little bit of a hit of a reward where we read some news article that makes it feel like we've learned something. The problem there is that we can get stuck like a rat pressing lever for food, where we're constantly refreshing our news cycle. And every now and then some big story might hit and we get this big hit of dopamine that says, wow, that was really important. And so we get stuck in this intermittent reinforcement process, which is actually the most addictive. It's kind of like a slot machine where we're just constantly checking our news, which is actually making us feel more anxious because it's not actually telling us, for example, who won the election on the day just because we're refreshing our news cycle every 5 minutes. So just knowing the process is helpful. And then asking ourselves this simple question, what do I get from constantly checking my news feed, right? Is it making me more anxious or less anxious? Typically, people will say it makes them more anxious because it's not solving their uncertainty and it's actually wasting their time and pointing out how much uncertainty there is. So having them ask that question, what am I getting from this, can help their brain kind of determine how rewarding it actually is. And if it's not rewarding, it helps them be able to step back. And I think of this as getting disenchanted with this. So in fact, we did some studies with an app called Unwinding Anxiety, where we could actually test this and we got a 67% reduction in anxiety in people with generalized anxiety disorder, where we're teaching the process of like map out these habit loops, see how rewarding it is. And when it's not rewarding, learn to step out of that cycle. And part of the stepping out is learning to step into something that is more rewarding, which is bringing curiosity to the feeling of anxiety rather than doing something about it. So typically we get stuck in the cycle of worrying or procrastinating or checking the news feed, and that just spins the wheel. Instead of going, oh no, I don't know what's going to happen, let me check the news, we can go, oh, what does this anxiety feel like in my body? And that helps us turn inward, where we can learn to develop curiosity, which is a very helpful skill in general. But that curiosity also helps us not press, you know, not go to our phones or where our news or our computers or wherever to check our news feed. And then we can just check to see what feels better. You know, does worrying feel better than curiosity? Curiosity feels better. It's a no-brainer.
I think it's fair to say that 50% of the country won't be happy with the outcome of this election. How do you make some of this stress relief long term?
Yeah, it's a great question. So here, let's say that we're on the losing end where we voted for somebody that didn't win. We can check to see what our brains do. Do we think about it and get angry? And then we can go through the same process. What do I get from getting angry? Can I actually change the result by getting angry? No, right? So we can learn to notice when we're getting caught in a cycle that's actually just, you know, it's like spinning our wheels in the sand, where it's just digging us deeper, where we're getting stuck in more anger and frustration versus letting off the gas, stepping out of it and going, okay, that happened. I don't have any control over that. I did what I could. I voted. And now can I actually let that go and move on? And if we notice what's more energetically taxing, to hold on to something, to get frustrated about something about which we have no control, or to let it go, to place, you know, to put it aside, to put it in the past and let it go. So it's kind of like the prayer of serenity, you know, let me control the things that I have control over and let go of the things that I don't have control over. And that's been around for a long time because it works. It's helpful.
That was WSHU's Molly Ingram speaking with Dr. Judson Brewer. For the latest news from the Long Island Sound region, you can listen on the radio, stream at WSHU.org, or download the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare. Now, you heard a lot of reporting related to the election this episode, and if you're looking for more, head on over to WSHU.org to check out our voter guide. We have answers to all your questions about early voting, ballot measures, deadlines, where you can go vote, and more. There's also an interactive map on there that can tell you who the candidates are in your area and what they stand for. The page is a work in progress, and we're going to keep updating it as we get closer to Election Day, so be sure to keep an eye on the guide. I'm Sabrina Garone. Enjoy the rest of your day. I'll speak to you tomorrow.